start, I'd like to kick things off by giving a little introduction about XAPA to help you understand who we are, and then I will move into the topic. So XAPA is a small organization, a small but mighty organization. We are, in French legal term, we're a mission-driven organization. So it means that in a statute, we are delivering, we have to deliver an impact and report on the impacts that we deliver. So we've got three key, I would say, pillars to our delivery. We have an advisory arm, which is not the focus of what we'll be talking about today. We have a programmatic activating arm, which is consistent deploying real program on the ground, and it's very much what we're going to talk about today. And we have an advocacy piece where we write a lot of articles, we do webinars, we engage a debate on a number of topics, including our smallholder value chains, human rights, ESG, and more. Next slide, please. I would say that the people, the size and the credibility of the people that we've engaged with over the years is a credit to the value of our organization. You can see here a little sample of the actors in the public sector and the corporate sector and academia with whom we have successfully worked. Next slide, please. So the why. The why is, for me, always the most important question. Why are we here today on the webinar talking about agriculture, about smallholders? Why should we bother? So in numbers, and I've got this from the World Economic Forum, agriculture represents 4% of global GDP, which is $4.5 trillion. And it also employs a quarter of the global workforce. When it comes to smallholders, we have about 608 million smallholders around the world, and they produce about a third of the food that we eat. And there is a very strong link also between agriculture and the poor, because 65% of poor working adults make a living through agriculture. So it's got there's a lot of things at stake here in terms of environment, social and economics angles. Next slide, please. So because there's a number of challenges that agriculture and smallholder value chain face, which basically make a strong business case for changes in practices for adopting regenerative agricultural practices. There is an issue of soil exhaustion. The quality of the soil in many parts of the world is depleting because we have been treating it badly. And there is also a very low resilience to climate change changes. There's also a lot of carbon that is released from the soil, and the soil has a strong ability to retain carbon. So in terms of climate change, there is also a lot that is at stake as well. When it comes to smallholder value chain, agriculture is increasingly an unattractive option for the future generation. Young people do not want to stay and farm the land. And that is an issue looking at the mission of feeding the world. And when you look at the pressure from deforestation, then you've got a combination that is even scarier. And we, of course, have the issues of the livelihood of the smallholders at the end of that chain on the first mile, who, rightly so, questioning why they should stay there and encouraging the next generation to go and do something else. Next slide, please. So at XAPA, when we talked about program development at the beginning of the presentation, we've got three different levers that we activate to deploy solution on smallholder value chain. The first one is probably the more traditional one. It's basically program design and management. So it's capacity building for smallholders. It's looking at ways to increase livelihoods through diversification, different regenerative agricultural practices, which are better for the land and better for the better for yield and better for the livelihood of our smallholders. What we're going to talk about today also is digital solutions. So what we do at XAPA is that we deploy, to help deploy at scale the first part of the program that I've presented. We developed our own digital solution, and we'll have later on from Christian a little demo about what we do on that front. And then last but not least, we also deploy and co-create innovative impact-linked finance solution. We're currently doing quite a lot of work in West Africa with Société Générale, for example. But this is probably the subject of another webinar altogether. Next slide, please. So I first, a little looking back at my own career, I first started to get fascinated and passionate about smallholder agricultural value chain way back when I was at Vodafone. And whilst I was there, I published a report called Connected Agriculture, looking at the future of 12 mobile-based solutions for agricultural value chain and what they could unlock. So we worked with Accenture, and basically the modeling gave us that, you know, if those 12 solutions were adopted across 26 of Vodafone markets by 2050, we could unlock income of around $138 billion. So the size of the prize was certainly very high, and worth looking into. However, in contrast to this, next slide, please. I came across this graph, which is pretty depressing, really, which looks at the number and the percentage of people facing hunger, people being undernourished and malnourished in the world. And you can see that it has been on the up since 2018. So my comment here, the contrast here is on purpose, is to say mobile solution for agriculture, I've got great promises. There is a lot to be unlocked through the solutions. However, are we doing enough, and is it working? So I'm hoping that through this webinar, we'll be able to explore some of the challenges and some of the potential that digital solution offer. Next slide, please. So what's giving me, I'm going to hand over to Christelle, the other Christelle, in a minute. What's giving me hope, despite this depressing slide, is that there is a proliferation in the world of regulatory and ESG framework that will, I believe, really, really incentivize the adoption of those digital solutions. Christelle is working with SAPA, Christelle Bessel, and she is a consultant on human rights. And Christelle, would you like to please come in and tell us a little bit more about what we should be scared or hopeful about?
Hopeful, I would put it. Thank you, Christelle, and thank you for the introduction. I will give a very, very broad overview of the recent developments in the regulatory framework, and I will not go out into the details and specificities of each of these rules because it's not the topic of the webinar today, and it could be a fully fledged webinar in itself. So as many of us know, much of the discussion around green transition, sustainability, ESG has always been focused on the E, the environment, yet today there is more attention being brought to the S and the G, as social issues, just transition, and this includes the impact of businesses that have on the workers and the communities in which they operate. This has driven legislation, administrative regulation, criminal prosecution, and civil litigation to impose corporate and executive responsibility on human rights abuses. This includes human rights trafficking, slavery, diversity and inclusion, etc. The most recent trends in this space are regional and national level legislation. I will only name a few, but there is really a very high proliferation, as Christelle mentioned. So we have the United States, United Kingdom, Australia, France, Germany, and other countries that have passed legislations to hold companies responsible for activities across their supply chain, and often down to the raw material, and impose corporate accountability for human rights issues, in particular in terms of how they're conducting due diligence and reporting. So for example, we have the US with their Uyghur Forced Labor Act, the German supply chain, the Norwegian Transparency Act, the EU all-encompassing Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive, or CSDDD, the EU Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, social taxonomy, deforestation, and others. This is not an exhaustive list, but while we may have the impression that the regulations are national or regional only, for example, US or EU legislation, it is important to note that their impacts are going to be global, because we're looking at things from a supply chain perspective. So whether goods or services or produce are brought into to the EU, for example, the impacts will trickle down all the way to where the raw material was sourced, and it's often outside EU borders, or even within EU borders. But just to say that the impact of this legislation is going to be global. So in order to respond to these obligations and expectations, companies need to avoid falling into the trap of preparing to respond to these seemingly disclosure and just reporting requirements, and deal with it from a holistic perspective. So companies will be required to undertake a remapping of their corporate governance and risk management. This includes developing a robust internal system for risk management and due diligence processes. Just to name a few of these processes, companies will have to consider double materiality, conduct human rights and environmental impact assessments, implement programs to train the board, employees, or workers in the value chain, because the perspective which we're working towards is to make financial and sustainability considerations as one. So the board have to be very much implied in this whole process. Traceability is going to become very important. So for example, in the US Uyghur Act, goods and services can be banned from being exported if the company does not respond to the presumption of it not being sourced in a with enforced labor. And in order to prove that, the company has to have sufficient information of where this material was sourced, exactly where, by whom, in order for the produce to come into US borders. And this is just an example. So understanding and complying with the regulatory requirements and disclosures, establishing a strategy on how to deal with such risks. But what's important to note is that we need to also go beyond compliance. So only complying with the reporting frameworks is not enough. The proposed legislation needs to help companies really think about their sustainability strategy, how they can conduct responsible business. So I will not go into very much detail, but basically they need to look at it from a holistic approach and consider going beyond compliance and using other types of leverage. So not just contractual clauses, auditing, and certifications, which have proven to be insufficient. Finally, I will conclude that reporting also, there is a flip side to the coin, is where if companies fail to abide by these obligations and considerations, there is liability. Most of this legislation are imposing corporate accountability for human rights, and there's a range of means by which the legislators are imposing on companies. So we have prohibition of import, confiscation of goods, fines, sanctions, administrative regulations. We have a rise of criminal prosecution, civil litigation on human rights and environmental issues. So this is in a broad sense to say that, in short, companies need to become prepared before many of these regulatory changes happen. And in order to do so, we will see today how SUTI could be one of the tools in the toolbox, amongst many other things companies and investors need to be prepared for. Thank you.
Thank you, Christelle. I think it's fascinating for me that when I worked with Vodafone and published that report on connected agriculture, very few, probably none of those regulation that you've mentioned were actually present. So it gives me great hope that actually the scaling that we so badly need will be supported by this frameworks. So next slide, please. So I'm now going to introduce you. I'm very, very excited to introduce you to a panel. We've got lovely mix of people from different, who have different perspective and bring different lens to this conversation. Our first speaker or panel member is Benjamin Kwasi-Adom, who is an international expert in smallholder digital agriculture. He's currently advisor on agriculture and fishery trade policy at the Commonwealth Secretariat in London. And he leads a supply side connectivity cluster of the Commonwealth's connectivity agenda for trade and investment. Then I give you Claire Rhodes, who is a long-term friend as well as a CEO of Producers Direct, who is an award-winning enterprise led by Farmer for Farmers. She'll present the organization later as well. And that organization has been internationally recognized by the like of Google through being an Impact Challenge winner. And before joining Producers Direct, Claire worked in a number of organizations, also supporting small-scale farmers. She worked with UNDP, Bill and Belinda Gates Foundation, and DFID. Then we have Stanislas Stan Bouquet, founder and CEO of Palo IT, who has a strong experience as a seasoned entrepreneur and VC venture capital portfolio manager and premium consultancy agency executive in the tech industry. Stanislas founded Palo IT in 2009, and was one of the first B Corp in the tech industry. And Stanislas has been French tech ambassador, board member of the French Chamber of Commerce in Hong Kong, and investor in over 15 startups. And then last but not least, we have our own Christian Chateauvieux, who is director of digital solution at SAPA. Christian, very interestingly, came from the IT sector and later on added an extra feather to his cap by taking a master's in sustainability. And Christian is in charge of all our development of digital solution at SAPA. So I'm handing over to each one of our panel members who will take us a little bit through their world and how they've engaged with the world of digital solution for agriculture. Benjamin, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Christelle. And pleasure to be part of I hope you can hear me. Pleasure to
yes,
be part
can.
Of this. Yeah, so it's good you've laid that context about digital solutions for agriculture. Can we go to the next image? So I'll talk about two things within the 2 minutes. So the Commonwealth Secretariat, we take the policy angle of all these digital solutions and services and technologies to be able to support people like Claire and, you know, SAPA and others who are actually developing the innovations and implementing it on the ground. So we ask ourselves, how do our member states understand, you know, digital agriculture? So we work on a framework that takes a holistic approach to understanding what digital agriculture is, including the solutions and services, the data, you know, the business, who pays for it. So this framework is something that defines what digital agriculture should include at country level. Then the second thing that we work on, can we go to the next image, is we pull out of the framework. If you look at the framework, you see the middle part, we call it data infrastructure pillar. So that is of huge interest. Data is of huge interest to all of us. And our argument is that data, and not just our argument, everybody is talking about data as a new oil or the new gold. And every resource like that has an infrastructure to be able to exploit it, to mine it. But data in our countries don't have that kind of infrastructure. So that's why we're talking about national agricultural data infrastructure. And we got somehow aligning it with DPI, digital public infrastructure, that governments need to take lead and put that infrastructure in place for data to be well managed. So those are the two things. Each of these can take me an hour to explain, but we don't have the time. So I'll hand over to Claire to continue.
Thanks so much, Benjamin. And if data is the new oil, then hopefully across all of these organizations that we represent, we can come up with a transparent way of empowering kind of smallholder communities to benefit better and more equitably from such a commodity. So perhaps that should be a goal for all of us. So thank you so much for the invitation to be here today. Christelle, thank you also for the introduction. So yes, I'm the founder and CEO of Producers Direct. And as Christelle was saying, Producers Direct is an organization led by farmers and for farmers. So what that means is that we place farmer leadership at the center of our model. So smallholder farmers play a central role in the design and delivery of all of our program activities. And we invest in farmer-led design because for Producers Direct, we know that this is key to unlocking sustainable and scalable solutions for smallholders globally, exactly the point that we're talking about today. Over the years, Producers Direct has built and scaled farmer-led models that offer a range of bundled services across training, finance, access to market, and access to the new oil data. So blending in-person and digital approaches, all of which are designed by farmers for farmers, with the ultimate aim of supporting smallholders to enhance their incomes and transform their farms into sustainable enterprises that are increasingly resilient to both economic and climatic shocks. And so far, Producers Direct has reached and impacted over 1 million smallholder farmers across a network that spans East Africa and Latin America, and also across multiple value chains, not only cash crops, but also food security crops as well. Just to share a few examples of the digital products we've designed and scaled through farmer-led design over the years, which we can talk about more in the panel discussion. An early example dating back to 2010 was WeFarm, which was designed to be an SMS-based platform that supported farmers to share their knowledge and expertise with each other. And at its peak, WeFarm scaled to reach over 3 million farmers across East Africa. And then products that we're currently working on with Producers Direct. The first is Farm Direct, which I'll talk a bit more about in the context of empowering female farmers. Farm Direct is a digital platform that essentially digitally replicates the benefits that farmers get if they're part of a cooperative, and does this for farmers who are typically marginalized from cooperative structures, particularly women smallholders and youth within smallholder communities. And so we're developing Farm Direct as a way to support women to digitally aggregate and sell their surplus food crops together in order to earn more income. And then the second product is Croppy, and this is a smartphone-based app. And we're looking at this as a tool for enabling smallholder farmers to benefit from the power of data and the power of AI-generated models. So in this case, we're working with the International Tropical Research Center, SEAT, who have developed an AI prediction model for coffee crops. And we, as Producers Direct, are looking at how this information can be accessed by smallholder farmers and enabling them to actually apply it on their farm. So I'll stop there, but looking forward to this conversation today. And I will hand over to Stanislas from Paolo IT. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire, for this quick introduction and very inspiring. Just to introduce myself, so I'm Stanislas Bocquet. I'm the founder of Paolo IT, which is a global innovation consultancy and agile software development company. So we are tech guys and not only dedicated to farmers, but obviously we know that the farming industry has a huge impact, and as we have seen with the different figures that you share with us, huge impact of gas emission and social impact. So at Paolo, our mission, it's really to use digital innovation and digital technology as a force for good. So we have strong commitments in this field. First, we are a B Corp company, and we were one of the first B Corp company in the tech industry several years ago. We are also a mission-driven organization in France, like XAPA. We are part of program as a new champion of the World Economic Forum, and in order to inspire large institutions, governments, and large corp to be more mission-driven and to progressively transition to a more sustainable and regenerative businesses. So we have, as you see, 16 different offices across Europe, Asia, Pacific, and Americas. And we gather more than 700 Palawans, so experts in different fields in design, tech development, agile, and impact experts. So our job is really to foster a new kind of impact businesses in order to launch new products, new services with a positive impact, and prepare also the growth mindset, the conscious leadership to executive and to transform culture, the culture of the different organization, to transform their organization to become more sustainable and regenerative businesses. So I will let
Christian.
With Christian, the mic. Yeah. Thank you, Christian.
Thank you, Stan. And yes, indeed, we've been also working together indeed on those very topics that you've been discussing and essentially partnering on this idea that technology can be, if used rightfully, be used to drive really positive impact towards these vulnerable populations that are smallholder farmers in particular. So in a few minutes, I will actually show you all in practice, the realizations of those works and co-design effort with Palo IT to come up with digital solutions on our end. So yes, as Christelle was saying earlier, we have at XAPA, we have created this SUTI initiative, which is, it stands for Scale Up Training, Traceability and Impact. And this is an initiative that allows the organization of scalable training programs to help farmers, and in particular, smallholder farmers, access to good agricultural practices, diversification techniques, and other knowledge with the objective of structurally improving their livelihoods and generating positive environmental and biodiversity impacts through improved or reduced environmental footprints and the adoption of sustainable practices. So with this SUTI initiative, we at XAPA plan to train 1 million farmers in this decade. So Claire, we'll be talking in a few moments about this objective, but our intent is ultimately to contribute to more socially inclusive value chains and to, of course, significantly improve farmers' life and working conditions as we do this. We have started, as Christelle said, with private sector sponsored project in Asia. We are now expanding in other continents with public and private cooperation schemes. And we have a solution which consists of three pillars to do the program design and management, whereby where we create a training curriculum, really, that is adapted to farmer contexts and needs. And we orchestrate all of the human efforts and field activities that is going to be required in such an enterprise. And you will see in the next in a few moments that we do operate in a hybrid model with in-person and digital activities. We have digital solutions that help us scale the programs in a cost-effective manner, and we can activate impact-linked finance to boost the economic profitability of such initiatives. So our approach, as I said, involves training sessions operating in a hybrid delivery method where we combine face-to-face in-person training with smallholder farmers, and we provide them with a digital e-learning continuum. So these trainings, they provide farmers with the knowledge, the techniques, the tools to increase their yields, diversify their revenues, decrease their production costs, optimize their farm waste reuse. And when you aggregate all of these together, this can actually help reach and pass a decent living income line, which unfortunately many smallholders, and particularly in developing economies and in low and moderate income countries are under. So at the same time, we collect data with digital tools directly from the farmers to measure the impact of the training on their work and life conditions. We can also value carbon credits, for example, from newly adopted agricultural practices to ultimately reward farmers from farming more sustainably. And towards this objective, we've created a set of digital tools to support our program operations and performance measurement needs. And each of these tools really have been specifically designed for their intended users. So on the left side, you see the participant app, which has been designed specifically for smallholders, farmers, and other vulnerable farming populations in mind. So that can be also plantation workers, for example. And this application allows us to disseminate training contents and measure their impact in a very cost-effective manner. At the same time, it brings smallholders with valuable services, such as market linkages towards agri players or financial services providers to which they may not be connected to today. And also to provide them with useful data, such as up-to-date market prices, local events information, alerts, or climate smart information. We have another set of tools, which we call the back office. It is our operational management system, which allows to cost-effectively manage all of the aspects of the program delivery on the ground. So that means enrolling participants into the program and capturing a number of baseline data that is going to be required to measure the impact, but also maybe to satisfy some of the regulatory requirements coming in the next few years, for example, around geolocation of farms, geoplotting to know exactly what raw materials come from where, land tenure documentation, etc. And last but not least, we have on the right-hand side a reporting dashboard that essentially allows us to create alignment with program sponsors, industrial groups, and investors who are behind such initiatives, and to essentially update them on the program progress and on the measured economic, social, and environmental impact. As you can imagine, all of these tools that we have developed are a key lever for us to reducing our operational costs and also our impact measurement efforts. So these tools are really been specifically designed so that we can also reach our objective at the intended speed and scale. And we've designed these tools really to address some of the issues that smallholders face. And I'd like to maybe spend a few minutes to illustrate some of that to you through a very short demonstration. So first off, we don't really design just an app. We actually designed a digital solution to satisfy a particular capacity program need. And so the app is highly customized, of course, to the situation and context. Here I'm showing you the app in a demonstration environment, but you can imagine that here the languages under which you access the application will be, of course, depending on your situation as a farmer. So here for this demo, we will go into an English presenting mode. This application is actually a website. It's not even required to have an App Store account or an email, just one single link, and you can click and access the install and the application and install it on your computer. So actually I could also use it directly here from my Windows computer as a standalone application. This application of ours works on smartphones, as you can imagine, but also PCs, tablets, including also feature phones, which are much basic phones that typically farmers or smallholder farmers can afford. So as the farmers log into the system, they are, of course, taken through some introductory steps to explain to them what the program is about, what objectives it is going to allow them to reach. And very shortly, they are exposed to an interface where, for example, here they can see notifications about market prices. So here we can see that there is a new price that has been announced by one of the program actors here, and we can look into the details of that. So this is a way to actually also keep the farmers engaged beyond the training time. And it is important so that they see an interest in using our application and also in providing us the data, which allows us to measure the impact. So the first aspect that farmers see as they connect is a course catalog, which really is tailored to their needs. So here we have an example of a rubber clinic course that has been made available for farmers. And here we can see that this particular farmer has already started some of these chapters. And here there's a new chapter that can be accessed for the first time. As the farmer gets to the to this chapter, the content gets downloaded on the local memory of the phone and can be then used in offline mode. So even when the farmers now return to their farm and are potentially disconnected from the network, they can still continue to access the training courses and resume from where they left off. The contents are really tailored to be as conducive to learning as possible. So not text heavy, but more picture heavy, video heavy, with testimonials and information that other farmers can relate to. I would say the module, the training module is a standard one, which can be interrupted and resumed where at any time. It includes also gamification concepts where we encourage farmers to complete and access new courses as their curriculum period evolves. Farmers can also reach out to external help. So we connect them through chat rooms to instructors or to their training, to their colleagues, their farmer peers in the same cohort and probably in the same community. So here a farmer could very quickly access a WhatsApp group and ask questions to other farmers through tools that they typically use. Here, this demonstration shows WhatsApp, but we connect to it, in essence, to any tool that is most appropriate for the community of farmers we're targeting. Beyond this e-learning module in this application, we also ask farmers to send us data to help us assess whether we're making an impact with these trainings. So we have a survey module, which typically consists of 5 to 10 basic questions that we will throw at farmers on a regular basis, maybe on a monthly basis. Simple questionnaires that farmers can address and answer, and also I would say complete even while they are offline. Here, as you can see, my browser is still in offline mode. So when I'm going to submit this, I'm going to get a message saying that there was no internet connection found at the moment. But I shouldn't worry. As soon as the connection is restored, my data is going to be sent. And actually, to show this, in practice, I can restore my connection here, and we can see that my data has been now successfully sent. Farmers can also access a number of messages from the program team and can access also a list of services or products that have been curated and selected specifically for the needs of the programs. Access to those services may also be depending or on particular criteria such as location, languages, or things like this. So that was a very quick run through our application. It also allows farmers to register digitally the sales transactions that they typically can do today in the informal economy. And so that can help shed some light on the last mile, or rather the first mile of the value chain, and where we can actually try to understand who the farmers sell to and at what cost. So, beyond this, I just wanted also to wrap up my short demonstration by the reporting dashboard and the back office. So the reporting dashboard is an interface that really allows us to share some program stats with our program sponsors. So for example, at a high level, how many participants did we manage to reach out to? How are we doing in terms of gender and youth inclusion? How are we doing in terms of impacts on farmer yields, income, productivity, and so forth? There are also drill down capabilities allowing us to go further into the details. For example, in terms of program reach, we can dive through additional information and see at any given point in time, for example, at this given date or location, what was the situation. So we can see that we had at that time 164 farmers farmed, which represents more than 4,000 hours of field training. A participation rate of 68% in the app, and farmers with an online activity of 22%. So these are things that allow to essentially see where we stand, and in terms of impact, we can also drill down into additional data and understand from the yield perspective, the production perspective, the revenues, or even the environmental footprint, how this program is impacting and hopefully reducing the use of chemical or undesired entrants, for example. Last but not least, we have a back office system that allows to manage the daily operations. And so this is useful for the teams on the ground. It allows them to organize training cohorts and capture all of the farm baseline data. So as an example, here we can see that, I'll take another farmer. We can capture a number of data points for each farm to also satisfy the requirements of the upcoming regulations. For example, when it comes to farming geoplotting and identifying the plots where the goods are created, capture tender information and information about the farm characteristics and the production. Yeah, that was in a nutshell what I wanted to demonstrate here. Passing it back to
you. Thank you very much, Christian. And I must say, I can't stop myself thinking I'm going to play almost devil's advocate, thinking almost watching it as if I wasn't working at XAPA and looking at all the goodies that we have, you know, in the toolbox. Thinking, you know, why are there hurdles that the smallholders face in adopting, you know, all those wonderful things? So I'm going to turn to the policymaker here with Ben. Ben, tell me, in the work that you've been doing, why isn't this catching up more quickly? What's going on? Tell me.
That's a big question. Yeah, that's a big question. So no, it's an interesting one because I think in 2018, 2019, CT and DABEC produced a report on this in Africa called the Digitalization of African Agriculture Report. And even at that time, 2018, 2019, there were about 400 platforms across Africa alone, 400 platforms. And out of that, about 33 million farmers were being reached with these platforms. But the adoption and use, you know, reach is one thing, but use is another one. So, because reach is how many farmers have you registered into your platform? But those who are actually actively using it was like 33%. So the big question was, why is it that we put in so much to develop these innovations and grow them out and promote them? And so there are lots of challenges that we can talk about because of time. I want to just say one. From my experience, it has to do with the business models for these platforms. You put so much money to develop it, it's impossible to provide for free services for farmers. And farmers are not used to paying for this kind of services. I used to be agricultural extension officer. So farmers are used to free messages, free information services. So if you even subsidize it to that level that farmer has to pay a peanut, it's still a question of, you know, so we need to think of what kind of business models do we need to have behind these platforms so that the service can be continuous to the farmers. Otherwise, the donor funding comes in 2-3 years, and once that comes to an end, it's difficult to sustain. So the farmers are interested. They like these innovations, the services. That's from my experience. They enjoy, they use, they see the impact, the results, but they don't have the means to continue, you know. So I don't think the biggest problem is with the farmer. The biggest problem is we, those who are providing the services to the farmers.
And just an add-on tiny little question here. Is the willingness to pay not there because the business case is not there, or because we have created the habit of not paying for the services? Which one is it?
When you talk to the farmer will tell you, no, if you're able to, you know, help me increase, you know, my production or the price of my produce, I'll pay. So the willingness is that they will tell you, but in reality is another thing, you know. So that's where their culture of getting free messages come in. So they will taste it, you know, they will taste the benefit of the platform, you know, you help them avoid, you know, pests and diseases or drought or flood, they experience it. But when it comes to continuous pay for it, that's where the problem comes. So they may pay the first season, second season, and they'll drop off. New farmers will come. So it's a mix of all this coming together.
Yeah. No, very, very, very familiar with all this from my time at Vodafone, I have to say. Stan, turning to you now, one from a, again, that's the idea of the panel, with very different lens onto this, the same question. What do you feel from an IT developer, what the hurdles are in encouraging adoption?
Yes, on the technical point of view, there were several that perhaps you already discovered when with the presentation of Suti. It's the first challenge was really to get access to the network without no systemic cellular connection. That's one of the first main challenges in because most of the different locations are remote locations. So the solution was to first to embed the content on the app to be accessible without connection. And usually we do it through the browser, and also to build an application that can store data in the local cache when offline or synchronization with the backend with no internet connection or with the internet when there is with a backup. So that was the first technical challenge. The second one is that we know that most of the farmers have no access to the last generation of mobile phone or smartphone. So they have not the same capacity to get access to all those data and with the new app. What we have done is to craft a low tech solution. That means that which require low capacity in terms of to upload data, and also to have an app that could have a responsive approach to adapt all the content with the different kind of phones and with the old and modern smartphone and with all the different browsers that we have and all different versions of browser for the last decade. The last one and the last technical challenge was also that most of the farmers have a limited education in terms of in the tech field, I would say, and also in plenty of different aspects of the content shared through the application. So what we have developed is that all the content is also available in audio, in local language, to be more inclusive with all the different farmers. So what we see, it's this kind of solution is a perfect example of how we can leverage low-tech solution to help small agribusiness players to be more productive, to be more resilient, and to also embrace sustainable production models.
Yeah. Knowing that obviously there's all the technical challenges, but the one that Ben mentioned earlier as well, which is the business case, so that's a business angle of how it gets plugged in. Thank you very much, Stan. Claire, now turning to you, could you give us some further examples of bad and good and all good examples of things that you've seen in this space? Nothing is better than bad news. Please share with us.
Okay, I'm not going to name names. So what I'm going to respond to is maybe principles on which kind of digital solutions tend to be either good or in some cases not so good, right? Things that have failed. And in that context, thinking about where Producers Direct has failed as well, right? So we're definitely not immune to that. So I think first and foremost, this could seem really obvious, but when you're investing in designing and testing digital technologies for farmers, it's really important to design them from the farmer's reality, right? And knowledge and experience. And that means if you're designing a solution for smallholders, you have to involve them in the design process from the beginning. And Producers Direct, we work with a network of 1 million farmers. And so we get a lot of startups, particularly asking us to work with the network of farmers that we support and test solutions. And my first question is, have you involved farmers as you've designed the product for them? And a lot of the time they haven't, which is an interesting kind of learning. And so that can be a really complicated, time-consuming process. You know, working on a design sort of set of workshops with farmers is not something that you do really quickly. It can be something that, you know, is a lot of iterations, a lot of initial misunderstandings. But if you don't do that, then ultimately the chance of your product being sustainable in the long term is a lot lower. The other thing I would say in terms of principles is thinking from the beginning about how the information that's being shared can actually be converted into action by the farmer. So, for example, really ensuring that smallholders are supported with the services they need to actually act on the information. Just as a very simple example, you know, we ran a training for farmers in beekeeping, and then only then realized that a lot of the farmers couldn't afford beehives after the training. And so the effectiveness of the training is obviously significantly lower if farmers can't take action based on that. And so that was one of the early examples of where we then layered on support for farmers to access loans in order to be able to invest in beehives, so that once they had participated in a training, they could actually do something about it. Similarly, with the work that we're doing with Croppy in partnership with SEAT and IDEA and GIZ, you know, there's this great opportunity for farmers to access yield predictions that are generated by AI, which in theory could really help them with on-farm planning and predicting how their coffee farm is going to perform throughout the season. But if you share a yield prediction with them, and then they don't necessarily either know how to take action based on that or have the tools or the support services to be able to take action, the value of that information is actually reduced considerably. So in terms of kind of principles, what I'd say from good examples of digital solutions is involving farmers in the design process from the beginning and really thinking about actually what is the action that you're intending to support as a result of the information.
I'm glad to say, Claire, that as AXAPA, we always talk about, you know, being farmer-centric, designing things from the inside out. And because even when we work with corporate entities and we're serving them as clients, the design has to be from the farmer. So you've seen that, you know, we're very, very much aligned, not surprisingly. We're very close to time. Actually, we are on time. So what I'm now going to ask you, and that was unprepared, you've got, if you imagine that the people on the call want to embark on a journey of utilizing digital solution for agriculture in the work that they do, if you had one piece of advice to give them in one sentence, very snappy, very short, very pointy, what would it be? Benjamin, over to you.
I think policymakers need to be part of the whole design of these solutions. It's more than technology. That is the message. You know, there are other factors that make the technology or the innovation work. So policymakers need to be part to be able to create that enabling environment.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Benjamin. Claire, what would it be? Okay, Okay, Stan, do you want to go next?
Oh, no, with pleasure, but I'm an elegant, I would like to be a gentleman, so Claire, perhaps.
Okay. Oh, thank you. I'm going to cheat too. Always involve farmers from the onset. Yeah. And if you're not designing for female farmers, then you're designing for male farmers. So we haven't talked about gender, but essentially, if you're not setting out on the pathway to design for female farmers, the chance of them being involved is significantly lower.
Yeah, so actually on the topic, we're organizing a dinner in London on the 13th of April, focusing on smaller value chain and gender support. So if any of you is interested, please get in touch with me. Stan?
Yeah, so I don't think that tech is a problem. Tech is only a commodity and with tech or today we can do everything. I think that the main challenge for this kind of activities or solution, it has been already mentioned, it's first to perfectly understand the end user's usage. So, and how to design this kind of solution, but really in order to adapt this kind of solution to the local usage. You can't see, you can't build this kind of solution with a global approach. It should be really localized and understand the local usage. The second aspect, and for me it's super important, it's also the business model, for sure, because if there is no business model, you can't have a large impact or exponential impact. Whereas we know, so for example, for farmers, that each farmer, and when you take thousands of farmers, they are feeding thousands or millions of people. And we see the impact in terms of gas emission and social impact. And the third one, it's also, and I'm totally agree, it's regarding the regulation, local regulation and global regulation. If you have not the right, and it's a main challenge for many startups, new initiatives, that to that local regulation and political action embrace the movement. And that's a main challenge. And last thing that I would like to mention, it's also that we have to work all together. So it's that means it's a large ecosystem that can change the way how we are consuming, how we are producing. And it's not only personal or some business initiative. It's a whole movement, and that you need to work with a large ecosystem to move forward.
A partnership is key, absolutely, and it is very complex, but it requires new skill as well. And conscious of time, and we're at 4 past, so very, very quickly, Christian, one final word of advice to the people that are on the line.
Well, I think most of the good advices that I came up with were already said. I think one additional one I think is regarding to is concerning the data confidentiality and privacy practices around farmers. We are always desperate in trying to get information from farmers and see them adopt the tools that we throw at them. But maybe there is also some education and some reflection on how we leverage that data, what we use it for. And so it is a question of educating farmers about the practices. It's a question of business model as well. Is it about intermediating or on simply connecting farmers together? I think all business models apply, and there are so many things to do. In our perspective, we shouldn't enforce or intermediate mandatorily, but rather connect and make things possible. So I will stop there. Trying to intelligently connect people together. That's
what yeah. Thank you for your final word of wisdom. Thank you to this panel. I really enjoy the variety of your thoughts, and I just wish we'd just had more time to spend on this session. So if I could encourage every participant to give us a little bit of feedback, there should have been a pop-up coming on your screen asking you to complete a very short questionnaire. It's not going to take you 15 minutes for sure, but all feedback always appreciated. And please get in touch if you'd like to continue the conversation. On this note, I wish you all a good end of day, and hope to see you all soon.